Thank you so much to our panelists, and we will move now into the Q&A. I want to reserve the first section of the Q&A for community members who are on the front lines against gentrification, and after that we will open it up to the broader spectrum of the room. Yes, and you're welcome to come up and speak into the mic, or if you wish to project.
Anyway, thank you very much. Ted, thank you very much for that talk. Lynn, you're absolutely right. That word has to be... We have to change the word. We have to have our own word to describe it, as Ted talked about. Genderification, it's removal. By no other term, it's removal. Now, us folks here, I'm from Africville. I was removed. I've lived all of my other time here. The thing I want to talk about is not just condos. I want to talk about when you look at our neighborhood in terms of the statistics surrounding our neighborhood. It is a low-income neighborhood that just happens to have the highest percentage of low-income housing than any other part of the city. Why is that? A healthy community, and Ingrid can attest to this, should be a community that is a blended community of incomes, types of housing, and different peoples. That's a healthy community. In our community, we went and had 6 houses built on Creighton Street for home ownership, so that those folks who had left the community would be able to come back to the community. Those 6 houses are on the space where 15 families used to live. All African Nova Scotian families used to live. So where's the advantage? And of the 6, only 2 of the home ownership is African Nova Scotian. When there were 15 families. So where's the advantage? But I really, really want to talk about is the intrusion into our community of low-income housing. Low-income housing should be shared throughout the city, down to South End, the West End, Clayton Park, the ravines, everywhere. We should be having low-income housing. I'm not against low-income housing because people need a hand up. But it's concentrated in our community. When we look at Gottingen Street, if we go back to the 1960s, I believe there was one service institution or agency on Gottingen Street. And if we look now, like Africville, all of the services not wanted in the other areas of the city area on Gottingen Street. Look at what happened when there was talk of putting a methadone clinic out in Fairview. You've seen the way that the community there rallied against that, not in our neighborhood. As a matter of fact, we don't want it so much, we're going to buy you a bus. And we'll give you a bus so you can drive around to the neighborhood. But you cannot establish yourself here because it's sending the wrong message to our children. It's bringing the wrong people into our neighborhoods. This is a commercial area. We can't have that here. But we have it all on Gottingen Street. So for me, when we talk about environmental racism, this is all a part of environmental racism for me when I look at it in terms of the development of our community. Before, in the 1960s, before people started dealing with the question of racism. We had our own, when we were denied entry, and not just on Gottingen Street, but throughout the city of Halifax, you weren't allowed. Signs used to be up, no dogs, no Jews, no blacks. Those are actual signs that were up in the city, throughout the city. But what that did, it made us self-sufficient in terms of providing services for our own community. We had our own stores, we had our own barber shops, because we couldn't get those services anywhere else. But in the struggle against racism, When we knocked down the doors, all of a sudden, that had a negative impact on the community. Because people now could go to other barbers, so they no longer went to their community barber. And that barber, of course, had to make a living, so he could no longer make a living, nor she. So we lost those businesses, stores closed. The impact on the community, and we really got to look at the real impact on this community. It's not just from the replacement or the gentrification, but we also have to look at the other end of the spectrum in terms of what else is coming into our community. The development that's being planned for the corner of Prince William in Gottingen and Maitland and on the old Met site, that thing was approved by City Council just because there was a low income portion of that development. And that's why it was accepted. It exceeds all of the height restrictions on Gottingen Street. Gottingen Street as an area and zoned requires that the Gottingen Street level be commercial. But they've been given an exemption. They're going to be allowed to put low income units on the Gottingen Street level. Pardon?
The one bedroom though, aren't they?
Well, there's the other thing. They're one and two bedroom units, and I believe there's some bachelor. So how does two bedroom apartments really serve a family? A family of three, a family of four? It doesn't. So it's really not serving the need that they claim it to need. But I suggest that we take a look at the full spectrum of development in our area. And, you know, really, people need to be taken to task when we talk about economic development. You know, when black people are allowed economic development, they're going to become independent again as they once were, and maybe not have to worry so much about racism. But as long as we're dependent upon a system to provide us with an income, then we have to be very concerned about racism because it's going to affect our very lives and the way that we raise our families. So we really, really need to take a look at the root causes and start putting in programs that we can take a young man like Rodney here, just graduating Dalhousie University, and say, young man, we want you to run a business on Gottingen Street. That needs to happen, and that needs to happen. You know, and so I talk about that. I talk about those kinds of things that need to happen in our community. So it's a much, much bigger issue. And I think Ted went and addressed that when you were saying about that it's you can't just look at the surface. When you were talking about those neoliberal, you know, the dip. I've never seen that map around the dip theory of thing. In 1890, well, you know what else those neoliberals did in 1890 to address that situation? They built an infectious disease hospital right above Africville. And they moved all those folks out to Africville and ran a sewer down that emptied at the high water mark. So there was an open sewer in Africville. So at the same time that was going on, they built that hospital and a lot of other nasty things that they put out in Africville. But we really, really... you know, this community has always been a welcoming community for people. During the Dirty 30s, when the Depression was here, people of African descent throughout the province came to the Halifax area to look for work. And not finding welcome in any other area, found welcome in this community. You know, this community is probably the center of the gay community in Halifax. You know why that is? It's because the people are welcoming. They are welcoming. You're our neighbors. We love neighbors. We love to have people around. So we need to, when we're talking about these issues affecting the north end of Halifax, and be careful when you say the north end of Halifax too, because there's people on the other side of Yonge Street who will tell you, oh, you're not the North End. We're the North End. Just because the stigma attached to the area. And they don't want to be attached to that stigma. And so that's why they changed Godinchen Street to Novalee Drive. One street, name got changed because of the real estate values. But you know what? Now they're shame. Because the real estate values here is much higher than the real estate values on Novalee Drive. So it didn't work. But we really, really, it worked in our favor. But we really, really, I mean, like if we're going to talk about issues in the community, we have to take a holistic approach to these issues. We have to understand the underlying causes and really deal with the root of the problem. Don't deal with the symptoms. Because we'll be dealing with the symptoms for our entire lives. We have to get to the root and cure it. Thank you.
Michael Davies Cole. I guess mine might be a little bit more angrier, what I'm going to say. I think it comes from, excuse me, here, I'm just going to put my stuff down. Stuff, when I read stuff in the paper and they talk about our welcoming community, and we are, but when you come to the community and open a business or start something and say, I want to be part of your community, here I am, come in and buy stuff from me, and then get mad when we don't, and complain that we're not welcoming you in, and then we become the bad guys. That's a one-way street here. What are you giving us? You've moved into this area. You say you want to be welcoming and friendly. Invite me to supper. Buy me a beer. Don't get mad because I didn't shop in your store, or I'm not part of this or part of that. You need to show me why you came to this community, not just because it was cheap rent and because it's a cool thing to do, because it has become a trendy thing. We are not a phase. We were here before it became cool, and we've had to be here. Yeah. So if you want to be part of our community, that's fine, but recognize what you're being part of. Again, with the de-gentrification, when you come in and a lot of people say, I'm against this, I want to rally this, let's have this, let's start a cause, let's start a movement, let's do this. I sit on a lot of boards, I go see a lot of things, and I go to a lot of groups and a lot very well-meaning, but then the group is all white. So what are you actually working to include here if you've excluded right from the start? That's what you have to look at. And I'm not meaning to knock anybody that's doing part and trying to do it, but as I think it's been said several times, take a step back and look and understand, because I don't expect you to understand what it is to be somebody of color. You're not, for those of you that aren't. Some of you are. Nor can you expect me to understand, although I've had to live in your world a lot harder, and so I've had to learn very fast to survive, but I'm not white. I don't know what it is to walk into a room and not have somebody judge me. I don't know what it is to walk into some place and not have somebody assume something about me. And I don't know what it is to not stand in front of people and speak for my race instead of for myself. So those things you have to understand is, I don't expect you to understand what it is to be of color. Listen. You know, you can only see through your own eyes. For everything else, you need to listen, and listen well. Thank you.
My name is Benita Frazier, and I'm not a speaker, but I am a North Ender. I'm from a little black community, Lake Loon, Nova Scotia. My mother moved us into Halifax. I was about 8 years old. It was Creighton Street. Creighton Street was where the black people came, that came from the country, Digby, and we were a family. Creighton Street and Main Street. Then Union Square was being built. My mother fought. We were the first family, actually, down Union Square. Now I own a home in the North End on Main Street. I've been there for 17 years, and my community has completely changed. Mm-hmm. I, 17 years ago, could walk from Main Street down to Union Square, down to Barrington Street to visit my friends anytime and not feel afraid. Now I do. Smith's Bakery, when I went to Johau, Bloomfield, and QEH. Smith's Bakery, we're always stopping there. Now I go in there sometimes. You know they don't want you in there. I said to my husband, this summer we're going to make it a point to go to all your places. And I hope we're treated right. If not, I think my pockets will be full with lawsuits. You guys cannot come in our community, not give our children jobs. My daughter is a lawyer. She has to leave here to go all the way out to Alberta to get a job. But then you want to sit here and talk about the prison. All the black children who do have education have to leave here. Look at all you guys. You're all here. Your family's all happy. How come my only child can't be here with me? Yeah. Other people's children. You have to understand, and I've been, my mother took me to rallies. I took my daughter. And we have to stick together. Looking at all you guys' faces and not seeing our face, you get a hold of us through the church. It's been that way for 200-300 years. And Kowalan Street Baptist Church is just down the street, and some of you probably live right around there. And a lot of you, I see walking on the street. You don't even want to acknowledge us. You look at us like we're a piece of dirt or something. And I'm tired of it. So if you want to be welcome in our neighborhood and be safe in our neighborhood, you should be more kind and more inviting and give our children jobs. The summer is coming. Don't give them to your own children, your nieces and your nephews. And, you know, and I worked for the Water Commission for years. And I know how it is here. I know how you get your own family, your own people. Stop doing that and let us in. We do want to work. We do own things, and it's because we're hard workers. We're not lazy, yeah. And half of us are on welfare, but I'll tell you that film tax, that's your white man's welfare check.
Other speakers.
Thank you. My name's Patty. I'm with the North End Business Association. And I just want to thank the organizers today for hosting this event and for this dialogue. I was asked recently, what are the examples in North America where gentrification has happened differently? And I was like, well, I don't know. There might be an example in Brooklyn. Apparently, there's an example in San Francisco. But there's not a lot. And the most common story is the story of displacement. And I'm standing here, and I certainly do not have any answers. I do not know what the answers is to gentrification is. But I do think we can try to do it differently. And I think it starts with these conversations, it starts with these relationships, and it's something that we're going to have to co-create together. So I'm representing some businesses that are interested in that. They are interested in hiring. Where's the woman who just spoke? There you are. They are interested in finding, They're posting job opportunities. They're looking for members from the community to apply. This issue, as the keynote spoke, as Ted was saying, is much older than just what's happening right now. And I just hope that the community, in engaging with the businesses, they don't know how to do this. No, there aren't a lot of examples. Like, there's not a textbook about how to do this. I don't know. But I hope we can engage in this conversation, figure out a better way, and not make this a classic story of gentrification. So, I'm available. If anyone wants to talk to me, connect with me, call me, please do that. I'm open to conversation, and I'm open to figuring something out. Thanks.
my name's Candace Day, and I want to speak about a community that hasn't been mentioned much today, and that's Creighton Street, right here in Halifax. That was a very large indigenous black community. Most of us were homeowners. Most of us, most blacks that lived in Nova Scotia came from what we call and what we address as two lines. One line being down one end of Nova Scotia, another part from another end of Nova Scotia. But people, black people, always congregated on Creighton Street. And we had a very, like I say, a very large and a very close-knit and culturally strong community. And it bothers me and upsets me that the heart of Halifax, which is anybody from Creighton Street, that's what we called it, the heart of Halifax has not been mentioned here tonight. And you need to recognize and know that we were here and that we have no intentions on going. And we're fighting back for our houses.
So my name's Neil. I used to, yeah. So I had the real pleasure of working with Candace, and that was the. I'll start with a bit about me. I grew up in a white affluent neighborhood in Dartmouth. My interactions with people of color at all. Really nervous. Most of my interactions were limited to bumping into each other in the hallway at school, and I was a very shy kid anyway, not to mention I had no idea of how to interact. I had no idea what I was doing. So I just did this, and it went pretty well. So I would say up until, and then even when I was in high school, I went to Dartmouth High, and Dartmouth High suffered from a very strange assisted separation, whereby you would pick your lockers and where they were, and there were hallways. And each hallway was essentially directly connected to a neighborhood. So I was hanging out with all of my friends from my neighborhood in my hallway. And as a result, even in a city, even in a school that had a very good ratio of people from every neighborhood sort of surrounding, we never really mingled. The classes were segregated as well, just by nature of our interests and previous education, basically. So as a result, I had no idea. I still say that I have no idea what's going on. Working with Candace, actually, I'm really happy I got to follow her. Working with her, we had a very mundane task of sorting dead letters together. And the idle conversation that we had was the first glimpse that I had that there was such huge disparity, and I had no idea. Since then, I've moved into the North End, and I'm that guy that we're talking about. You know, and it's strange to be in that position because when I saw that this was called white ignorance, I was like, perfect. That is exactly what I feel like I'm suffering from. I have no idea what's going on. And I don't know where to begin. An interesting thing that I've noticed, I live on Willow, right at Clifton. I live across from the Newfoundland store. A lot of people from the neighborhood come to the Newfoundland store. It's a bit of a strange hub, and yet, everybody drives there. Nobody walks. I never see anybody walk up. I sit on the front porch playing guitar, and people will get out of their cars, they'll sort of smile at me, go into the store, come back out, get back in their car, and drive. And I've seen them on their stoops as I wander through their neighborhoods, and they're a stone's throw away. There's no reason not to walk, you'd think, but there is. And tonight I got the opportunity to hear some of the examples and how that feeling is. So, yeah, I guess I'm just saying that I have no idea. and that some of us are as lost as you guys are. And we'd love to help. I'm glad that this is happening, and I hope that this keeps happening and we keep coming out. Talk to you later.
Maybe a couple more comments before we turn it back over to our panel. We did post the end time for this event at 8, but we started late, so don't feel bad if you do need to leave and whatever.
Can I ask if there's any other indigenous people self-identified? Wonderful. Miigwech. It is so hard to be in a space where your voice is singular. I'd just like to begin by saying I appreciate the panel. Thank you so much, each of you. When we talk about inclusion, it kind of has to start at this level, where we have our keynote speaker as a Black or Indigenous person. We have to come face first into this group where we have people that are like, people that don't have that opportunity to have that space to talk. So as much as it's great to have respondents, I'm often welcomed into spaces to do a dance, to do a prayer, to do a ceremony, but I've never been asked to speak as a keynote in this community. It's also really important to acknowledge that there is no one way to fix this issue, and that it's so hard because we have so many like historical issues that are coming up, and we're coming up here because we don't have this space. So as soon as we come up here, we're like, this is it, you know, Africville, slavery, residential schools, everything. And it just like comes at you like all at once. But in actual fact, we can tackle these one by one. We can take these issues on one by one if we're allowed the space, if we're given the space to talk about it. So when we're up here and we have the opportunity to talk, it seems like this like tsunami of issues that come behind us, and it seems so powerful. So it starts at this level. That's my message. And it starts with talking to different people that I haven't seen. I know a few of you. But it starts just with kinship. It starts with approaching people in public. Acknowledging, making eye contact. You know? Just allowing that space where you're not like looked down upon. You know, so when we're looking around this room and there's like definitely POC people, definitely white people, we need the opportunity to like actually make contact. And this is your opportunity. If you don't leave this room without making contact with a POC person, then you shouldn't have been here. So I just want to, give that opportunity. My friend Tino is here. Do you want to say anything?
Just to address like the woman from the North End Business District. I think it's kind of.
Go to the mic.
I think it's kind of. I don't really know what the word to use would be. You were saying like people should come to you, but you're coming to their community. They've been here, you know. So like this community centers. I had to leave because I was actually like physically. Like angered by that. Like you're expecting these people that have been in this community to come to you. Like that's entitlement.
It's entitlement.
And privilege, and it's I'm shaking right now because I'm so mad. Mm. That's not okay at all.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Tina. Yeah, so I guess that was my message, as well as to just acknowledge that I know people are sick of hearing it, but we are on Mi'kmaq unceded territory. Okay? I had a friend of mine whose partner recently said, I'm tired of going to events where I have to hear this. It's really too bad. You know? I'm Ojibwe, Soto Ojibwe from Manitoba. I was born and raised in Toronto. There are like over 10, 13 treaties in the city of Toronto. There's not one singular treaty here in Halifax. So we have to remember that. We have to acknowledge that this is like, it's not a historical like museum type issue, that it's a very current issue. And that it's when we're given the space to speak at these events where we have the power to say, like, hey, okay, actually, yeah, let's, like, do a land claim, you know? But it's when I'm afraid, when Tino's afraid, when we're afraid to speak in these environments, that's when we just, like, swallow it. And I need everybody here, white and POC, to, like, support each other and to, like, you know, be true in solidarity. It cannot be convenient solidarity anymore. Miigwech, ki kana gana.
Hi there. My name is Evan Cool. I'm a community legal worker with Dow Legal Aid, so I work in the neighborhood, but I've mostly lived in the West End and Dartmouth. It was a great event, and I just wanted to talk about three different issues that I'm working on right now that I think is relevant to some of the discussions that were happening tonight. For starters, how many people here work for minimum wage or close to it? Do you think it should be $15? Yeah, so right now there's a coalition of unions, community organizations, and political organizations coming together to demand that the government raise the minimum wage to $15. It's absolutely ridiculous that people work full-time and still live in poverty. So this is a step to addressing that. For people who don't or can't work, through my work at the Dow Legal Aid Clinic and my work with Nova Scotia ACORN, we are putting together a general assembly of people who are on income assistance. This is happening Wednesday, May 27th at the JBO Centre. It's at 2103 Gottigan Street. Food and childcare are being provided. We held a bunch of meetings throughout the city, different areas of the city, Dartmouth North, in this neighborhood, and in Spryfield. We identified three main issues. One is affordability. $535 a month is not enough to get you a house anywhere in the city. And $250 a month is not enough for food, transportation, clothing, laundry, what have you. Second is access to education and employment opportunities. For all of the stereotypes that exist about people on income assistance, the Department of Community Services actually makes it quite difficult for people to access education to make themselves more employable, and makes it difficult for them. That's right. Yes, she did. She spent 9 years on income assistance in the 90s and is now, while she was getting her master's degree, and is now telling people that 4 years is an extraordinarily long time to spend on income assistance. So they're making it really difficult for people to access GEDs. GEDs, they'll tell someone to get a job or look for a job in fast food before getting a GED. They'll make someone jump through months of hoops to get into any education program, and that's not right. For employment and for the person from the North End Business Association, I know plenty of people from my work who are looking for jobs, and no one's hiring right now, mostly because of the color of their skin. So I would encourage you to do a little bit of outreach, maybe go to the YMCA Employment Center, maybe go to the UNIAC Center for Community Development. I'm sure there's plenty of talented young people who would be happy to work in North End businesses. However, Department of Community Services, they make it hard to work too. So that was another main issue. And then finally, for people who can't work, people who are disabled, which constitute 60% of people on income assistance, the government just makes it cruelly hard to access basic needs, basic health needs, medical equipment, special diets for people who are diabetic. Bus passes, they're cutting bus passes. They don't even give you a bus pass or a phone if you're looking for work, so figure that one out. But so that is next Wednesday, May 27th from 5 to 7. There's information about it on the Halifax Media Co-op's website, or you could call the Dow Legal Aid Clinic. I brought 5 flyers, so I might not have enough, but I'll leave some. Is there a place maybe on that table? I'll leave some on the table, so maybe if people want to copy down the information and leave them so other people can see them. There was just one more thing. I became aware through my work with Dow Legal Aid and Acorn last week that Metcap, have people heard of Metcap Living? Big-time slumlord, they're a national corporate landlord. They've started doing credit checks, and they've increased their rent to $680 a month for a one-bedroom apartment. DCS, if you're on assistance, the max you can access is $535 a month. And if you work minimum wage, even with full-time hours, that's about 50% of what you're taking home. So it's not quite gentrification. I learned the term upmarket. They are trying to kick, but I mean, as terrible as those apartments are in Highfield Park, Pinecrest, as terrible condition they're in, like there's a beautiful community, but the actual, you know, places themselves aren't great. They were a place of last resort for a lot of people, including probably some people who were forced out of this neighborhood because of their financial situation. So I'm a member of Solidarity Halifax, too. We put together a statement about that, and I brought more than 5. There might not still be enough, but I'll start circulating it. I'll put it on the table. And it will also be online tomorrow if you want to learn more about the situation. And thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to talk about this.
Our panelists have graciously suggested that they not follow up with comments and we just allow more voices from the room. What I would propose to you is that we continue to have people speak till maybe 8:30, which is in 10. Maybe we'll give it 10 or 15 minutes. And let's say 10 minutes till 8:30. And then I encourage everyone to stick around and get to know one another, because as we've heard tonight, this is an important part of building a sense of community and a sense of strength that would actually allow us to confront these issues.
I actually had more of a question for the panelists, so I thought it would be a really nice lead-in. But my name's Logan Lawrence. I'm a graduate student at Dalhousie University, and I'm clearly not a person of color. One time I was living in Mississauga for about 3 months on a schoolwork term, and I got in a bus, and I was the only white person on the bus. And like that was the first time in my life that I'd ever experienced anything like what I can only imagine would be that a number of people experience here every day, where they feel that sense of otherness, where they look around and they don't see a face that isn't theirs. So I can't say I understand what that feels like, but from my limited experience, it was a pretty scary thing. So I'm sorry you guys have to go through that on a regular basis. I guess my big question, because I've been to, actually, Elle's not here anymore. She was here, but she did an event at Dalhousie a few months ago on leadership, and we talked about you know, race and equality. And my big question for that was, you know, as a privileged white male, what's my role in this? And I know a few of you pointed out too, you know, there's a little bit of irony in the fact that our keynote was a white male, not to take away anything from, you know, the message that you had. So that was going to be my question to the panel, because I'd heard, you know, there's some things that you can lead and there's some things that you have no role in leading and you can do your best to support people. So that's my understanding of it, but I'm curious for what the panelists think the role of, you know, people who aren't people of color, people who come from a position of privilege, what their role is, in being a part of making change in our community. And I'm sure people in the audience have something to add to that too.
There was another question, yeah?
Hi, I wasn't really intending to come up. I didn't really know about this until about an hour before the event. I live just on the other side of that Yonge Street barrier in Hyderstone. I'm not from Halifax. I'm actually from Ontario, and I'm working a good job downtown. I'm a carpenter, and what I had noticed is that a lot of the black men, the only job, the well-paying jobs they can get in the construction industry are in concrete placement and finishing. It's a good job, I mean, in terms of pay. Long hours. A lot of these guys are working 12, 15, 16-hour shifts on their Fridays when there's work. So I wanted to say something about Halifax as well. I come from a pretty messed up conservative town of London, Ontario. And, well, there's some good things going on, but my high school, Beale Secondary, across the street, there were two methadone clinics. Conveniently, there are times to come to those methadone clinics when we were in class, and it was a nice, the teachers would be like, oh, that's a reminder of what you can become if you don't finish school. This is also the most multicultural school, where a lot of the indigenous students would come in on a bus from outside of town. They were sent to that school because, well, there's a methadone clinic across the street, and that's acceptable. And also, conveniently, there was a multi-million dollar police station put next door for that reason as well. One thing about Halifax, Dartmouth, Nova Scotia in general, is that while you talk about these issues a lot more than other places in the country, and I've lived across the country, there's a lot of action here, and it's really, really encouraging when you want to get something done and you want to change something, you can come and talk to people, whether it be the church or the YMCA or even the business associations. I've been involved with the Granary Food Co-op for the last 2 years. I think, I don't see anyone else that's of volunteers. In the last month or so, we've realized that we're all white. That hasn't always been the case as far as I understand, but we're wondering, well, why is it all white? It's not that we haven't said, oh, well, no blacks allowed, or it's not that we haven't reached out when volunteers have the time to reach out, but it's because, well, maybe we're not attracting people from other cultures because we're the only people coming up with ideas. Maybe we're only catering to our own. Now, we have set an initiative to reach out. Now, while we can't hire any of you because nobody gets paid at the Granary Food Co-op, we are always looking for volunteers, and it's a really great place for career development and learning and trying new skills, and it can be a stepping stone. So I kind of want to take this opportunity to reach out to you, welcome you into our doors, and we'll be doing a better job at reaching out to you as well. So, thank you.
Sorry, I'm acting a bit like a diva coming in from the outside. You haven't seen me yet. My name is Tamar. I've been thinking a lot about this issue. I came at a good time when the people from the ground were speaking. And to my peers, who I see a lot of in my room, so you got a privilege, white skin privilege, wealth privilege. I think there's a very simple thing we could be doing, but I think what we're not willing to do is stick it out. And a campaign that would mean success is 5, 10, 20, 25 years. And I don't think we're willing as a group to stick that out. And that would be requiring betraying the people in our families, betraying the people that we depend on, and losing some of that privilege in that defense of other people, which include a constant degradation of yourself. There's no other way. If we're gonna stand with our brothers and sisters who are dealing with this all the time, what you think we're not gonna get to feel it? No, I'm sorry, we're gonna have to feel it. And I worked in city government for 2 years in Vancouver, and I could tell you the bureaucratic corruption is disgusting. And we don't know the bureaucrats' names. We don't know where they live. We don't know where they go and eat their dinner. We don't. And you know who does know their names and where they live and who pays for their dinner? Is people with money and the developers. And they're in a constant lobbying campaign. And we're not making trouble for anybody. And it's not a kind of trouble that takes 5 minutes. It's like, are you in it for the long haul? Because there's no way to win. unless you're in for the long haul. And we should not be putting people with less privilege on the front lines and having them have to deal with these people. It's us. Us. We have to be dealing with these people. We're the ones that have to go interrupt all of it and take the heat and be accountable to the people with less power and privilege. And if we're not willing to do that for a long time with no expectations from, I think the hatred towards white people is legitimate. Mm-hmm. Legitimate. I don't think it's effective, but I don't judge it. I don't judge it. It's fair. And people with less power, in whatever position you are, and people with less power, we don't get to expect the trust from people with less power. No, we have to prove our trust to them, and we only prove that stuff over a long period of time. And with the issue of gentrification, is we talk about single mothers, and they don't have time. So we have to check with them and see what they're saying, and be accountable to them, and they make the decisions, and we do the dirty work.
I've heard that some of our panelists do need to go, so I'm going to bring it to a close on that excellent note. Please join me in... Oh, yes.
I guess I shouldn't have waited, but actually this is an invitation, I think, perfect flow off of what Tamar is saying, that it is going to be a long time before we start to see some things, and it's actually just going to be a lot of work. And so I think... I've been working in this community for a little bit over a year. I'm from North Preston, and so I think that historically, you know, I hear stories about how my grandparents would talk about their parents, taking their horse and buggy on the street from North Preston over to set up their stuff to sell on Goddard Street, and then come back and bring that wealth to their families. And so for me, it's I feel like Goddard Street is my home, and that connection to Preston is so strong for me. And that actually, I found out that my great grandparents, I'm still learning the history, but that we actually have some links to Africville. And so I'm finding out this information about my history every day. And so my dedication to this work and this community is really strong. And I want to invite everybody. I've been working on this project with the Barrister Society for over 6 or 7 months. And it's a really important piece of work, because what I did was I designed a process for the Barrister Society to... This is the first time that the Barrister Society... Not the first time that they've done engagement, but the first time that they hired a community consultant to come into their organization to help them craft a design, a project that... of engagement. So I did that, and so I'm really proud standing here to say that I worked with the Barrister Society over 6 or 7 months, or probably longer, to create a community engagement plan that served the community. And there's an event happening Friday, in which I would invite everybody to. I know that if everybody comes, we will be short of food and all that kind of stuff, but oh well, that we're going to have the Chief Justice there. We're going to have some deputy. There's going to be the deputy of whatever. There's some key players from the justice legal profession that are asking questions about what do we do. And so we really need to come and take them to task. It's going to be at the Friendship Center Friday, 12 o'clock till 4. And we're really inviting you to come. We're going to share the process that we've been that we've done over time in the engagement process. There's also going to be the report that I wrote in partnership with some people at the Barrister Society. So that report of what I heard from people when I went out, asking them, what do we need to do when it comes to justice? And so there's some meat in that. And it's going to be, what I hope is, if we have a good represent, and I can post this on the page so that everyone can I can post it. But I really want everyone to come, because I think that we really need to show up in numbers. We really need to kind of come with some ideas, and we need to hold people to task and show. If this room came and said, we care about this justice issue, which I think gentrification is one, a huge one, and we represent to them that we're ready, just in the mere numbers will kind of show them that we're taking this serious. And there's a question.
No, I was going to say, are you aware of the conference going on?
Yeah, so yeah, it is running. There's a lot of things that are going on this weekend, so it's really hard to pick a date sometimes, and so we hope that it would be. And I'm trying to just promote in any kind of way that I can, and hopefully that there will be another phase. So, I mean, I think whoever can come on Friday, that'd be great, but then there's a whole other phase that's going to come to the ground. So just to kind of, and I guess, I mean, this is another question too. It's like, what is the best way of getting information out to people, I think, is one of the hard things, but I think that, you know, this is a role that the Radical Imagination Crew can play, and a role that, you know, NECC, the North End Changemaker, like Lisa Roberts, there's roles that people are playing to get information out to people, and so I think that whoever's playing those roles continue to do that, because we really need to kind of get the invitation out to community in a way, and residents, you know, like, what's the best way to kind of, I mean, it's through the Y and those other places, but maybe people come up to me and I'll take your number down and I'll call you personally. And that's all I have to say. Thanks.
And a brief announcement? We have one more brief announcement.
Hi, everyone. Good evening. I'm Anne Devine. I just want to say I'm sitting there and I'm feeling really quite guilty because the person from the North End community, Patty... she's still here. Okay. When we heard about the gentrification of Gotchardon Street on the radio, myself and Professor Mei Chung, we decided to take a walk down and see what we could do, what we could help, how we could participate, having done employment equity partnership when I was at the Human Rights Commission, and various diversity work. And through Professor Ingrid Waldron, I have to say that Patty did reach out to myself and Professor Mei Chung, and we will be meeting her on Monday. So I just want you to know that they have made an effort, and it would be totally wrong of me to sit and allow it to pass that she didn't reach out to
us. Thank you, Anne. That's true. She reached out to me and wanted to help. So I think we have to acknowledge that.
Thank you for that. Brothers and sisters, it's been a singular pleasure and great privilege to learn from all of the people in this room and to share this time with you. I am uncharacteristically optimistic about the future. And I hope you'll join me in celebrating that optimism by sticking around for a few minutes and meeting and greeting people you don't know and forming those connections we know will be the bedrock of a successful struggle to reclaim our city from the forces of oppression and exploitation, as they affect all of us, but not all of us equally. So please join me in thanking our panelists and join me in thanking others who've spoken tonight. Have a good evening.